If you're a dog lover or a dog owner, you are in for a treat. Dr. Fern Castle has been a psychotherapist of over 35 years, working with professionals and leads to get maximum performance. And you may be thinking, why would a psychotherapist want to talk about dogs? Well, because Dr. Fern Castle is a dog lover. I have been fortunate to know Dr. Castle for 5 years. If you hear me refer to her as Dr. K, it's because of our personal friendship. And this interview is a guide, is a way for you to think through anxiety with dogs and to think through yourself. So, Dr. Fern Caslow, welcome.
Thank you, Scott. Appreciate this interview and a chance to really share with people how to deal with anxiety in yourself and in your dog or
I couldn't
dogs.
think of a better person to have this conversation with. One, because you are a fantastic psychotherapist, and two, you're a dog lover. So it's like the double whammy. Right? You get the best of both worlds. So I do want to start with this. As a human therapist, why is the topic of dog anxiety so important to you?
Okay, so first of all, anxiety is a very key topic for any therapist, right? And working with high achievers, which is where I work most of the time, anxiety is really something that shows up a lot. They have a very high rate of anxiety and other issues that affect mental health. So anxiety is something I deal with a lot with people. Yes, I love dogs, but I've also been very involved in the human companion animal bond. Really, since the earliest days that, not that people love dogs, because that goes back a very, very long time, but since the earliest days that this has been a subject that has been on the radar of therapists, veterinarians, of the population at large, where they've really started to talk about what is this bond? What does it mean? What about pet loss? When I started, it was really, oh, it's just a dog when a dog died. And we really have moved so greatly to understanding the relationship. Although there are a lot of things that are landmines that keep us from getting the best out of that relationship. So for me, we have anxiety in ourselves. There's a lot of anxiety in dogs. And this bond is really important. It's been something I've been passionate about for a very long time. So to work with anxiety as it affects us and as it affects our dogs is really. That's a no-brainer. It really is an arena that affects the whole quality of our life and the quality of life of our dogs.
And over time, that's important. What is one of your favorite things to do with your dogs?
And then I want to go back to something I didn't share about that. Why am I so passionate about it? What is one of my favorite things? Just being with my dogs. If you ask my dogs, they might say, one of them might say, throw on a ball. And another one might say, oh, food, sharing food with my family is the best. But for me, it really is seeing what my dogs love and doing it with them and just being with my dogs. Each one is different. I have four dogs now and two grand dogs. One of my dogs that was almost 17 just passed a few weeks ago, but each one of them brings a different gift into my life, and I really focus on being with that dog. And so I don't have an answer that says this is my favorite thing. I have an answer that what I love to do with Viva is play ball. What I love to do with, Elena, she loves to get for a walk with me. She's a sight hound and they have runners, and as soon as I walk in the door, she's ready at the door for us to go for a walk. So there's not one favorite thing. But can I go back for a minute to something that I didn't share with you that's really something I'm very focused on? And I think I really want to start this conversation very clearly. So I'd like to circle back to that.
Yeah, absolutely. What is it that we missed?
So one of the things that I didn't say is that in my passion about dogs and the anxiety they have or anxiety, one of the things that we don't talk about is people talk about, get a dog when you're depressed, when you're lonely, when you've got anxiety, just to improve the quality of your life. But there's a lot of talk in recent years about emotional support animals, emotional support dogs. And as far as I'm concerned, we all need an emotional support dog in our life, right? But one of the things that's happened is that we have misused this bond. So this is a tremendous, it's really a gateway, the way I look at it, to being the best we can be, living the fullest life, dealing with the upsets, whether it's anxiety, depression, loneliness. The problem is that instead of using this as a gateway to grow ourselves, we've used it as a band-aid, actually kind of a drug, where we just numb ourselves over. We pet our dogs, which is wonderful. I love to pet my dogs and they love to be pet. But if you're looking at dealing with mental health and really the fullness of life, then it's using this relationship as a gateway so that we can live our most joyful. We can live fully. We can live on our purpose, and we can help our dogs to do that too, because right now that's not what's happening. And I know we're going to talk about this anxiety loop a little bit later on, but I really want to set the stage by saying that this is a relationship with so much potential for the growth of humans, like the dog guardians, the dog parents, and their dogs. And we're not only not making the best of it, we often are limiting or even harming both us and our dogs, the way we're using or not using the relationship.
What I really like about what you just shared, Dr. K, is that it truly is a relationship. You know, it's not just one-sided that I have a dog. It's I have a dog and the dog is a friend. So I like the quality that you just brought up of that interaction. And you had shared with me earlier that it's always been common for dogs to get separation anxiety. And it seems like the number's been increasing. Would you mind sharing some of the numbers that you've uncovered?
Yeah, absolutely. So dog separation anxiety and anxiety was something that we saw. It was not that common, but it was something that we did experience and we knew about. And, you know, we all talked about like dogs that got into trouble when they were left alone, they got into mischief. We didn't understand it as well as we do now, but the numbers have skyrocketed. So at this point, we're seeing numbers such as 7 out of 10 dogs having anxiety. 70% of dogs exhibit symptoms of anxiety.
Can we pause? That's a huge number. Seven out of 10. That's a large number.
That's a huge number. And pet parents are saying that for the most part, when you look at some of the studies, 3/4 of them are saying that the dogs are more anxious than they are.
Wow.
So that's, yeah. And the increase is really alarming. So over the last few years, we know that people have increased their anxiety since COVID, basically about 25% since 2019. Well, these are crazy numbers, but different studies have shown that dogs have increased their anxiety in that period and anywhere from 40 to 700%. Yes, 700%. I mean, those numbers for an increase are almost beyond comprehension. And owners say that 52% of owners are seeing separation anxiety in their dogs.
So it's not just the dogs that are having separation anxiety. It's also the humans, their companions. Would you say that there's a correlation between the two? That let's say I have a dog, okay?
Okay.
And I start getting anxiety. Would it be common for my dog to also get anxiety as well?
Okay, so that's it's a great question, and it's not such a yes, no. So if you have anxiety, there is contagion, and your dog can pick up the anxiety from you, which is one of the things I was saying when we're using them as a band-aid, we're actually dumping our anxiety, our depression, our anger, these big feelings on our dogs, and it actually gets them sick. It can make them less healthy mentally, but it actually can translate into physical illness. So we can dump that onto our dogs. On the other hand, there are dogs that just come in, either they've been in a rough situation in the beginning. Sometimes it's because of, you know, really a horrific situations. And we've seen some of those in the news, or tough shelter situations where they're overcrowded and they just couldn't get the best care. But dogs can come in the way they're wired up, their early experiences or even later experiences in an older dog. So there's all kinds of reasons that dogs can come to us with their own anxiety. So yes, we do set it off in our dogs, but the dogs can also come in with it and they can trigger our own histories. You know, it's kind of in vogue to talk a lot about attachment styles today. Like, how do we deal with attachment in relationships? Do we get, you know, do we have healthy attachment? Do we avoid relationships? Do we become overly dependent? And so our styles will influence our dog. And our dogs also come in with their own set of just the way, you know, they're presenting and the way they've responded to their history, to their traumas, to their own neural wiring. So it's a wonderful question. And we could go on and do, you know, we could do a whole course on that. But it is very, very true. Our anxiety can create, but dogs have a lot of anxiety on their own. They have trauma just as we have trauma. They have neural wiring just as we do. And we've got an interesting setup, as we can talk about as we continue.
You had shared with me that in general people's anxiety has increased. Do you happen to have that number as well?
Yeah, and the number that I think I mentioned is that it's roughly 25% since 2019. And, you know, if we look at that and we look at that's a huge number, right? 25%. And there's a lot of reasons that we could explore about why, but it's significant. It may not be in that 40 to 700%, which is truly just alarming, but it also is a very significant increase. And there's no reason that we expect that to go down anytime soon. Mental health services, therapists are just, they're slammed in their practices since COVID.
When we take a look, you know, you had mentioned that there is a band-aid that comes from us in being with the dog. Does it matter where the dog comes from in order for them to have separation anxiety? Like, you know, say a shelter versus a breeder.
Okay. You can have separation anxiety from dogs that have come from either situation. And we probably see more of that from shelters because of the, you know, the way they got there. They may have been not properly socialized as babies and not really had that, you know, ability to develop. They may even be too young to develop that object permanence that we talk about in psychology, where I leave and I come back, right? I leave and I come back. So you also can have dogs that were brought to a shelter from owners, sometimes loving owners that fell into horrible circumstances, sometimes not such loving owners that, and they've come through a lot of trauma. There are many, many reasons. So you do see more of a preponderance, but no, this is not a shelter dog thing. First of all, anxiety comes up from a dog, can be in any situation. Hopefully a good breeder will breed to have dogs that are emotionally stable, but that doesn't mean it always comes out that way. And separation anxiety can happen from a breeder. We've seen it, you know, everybody's always known that this dog, certain breeds tend to be what we call Velcro dogs, right? If you think about like a Vizsla or different other kinds of dogs, often little dogs, but not only little dogs, we call them these Velcro dogs because they're very attached to their owners. And so that's the positive side, is that you have a great companion. The other side is when you go to work or you have to leave them, or the emotional state that they may be in when you go off. So people can love their Velcro dogs, but what you really want is a really healthy bond with your dog. You want a situation where you're both regulating, you are regulating your nervous system, right? And helping the dog to regulate theirs so that you can make good decisions. And actually dogs make choices and decisions. So you want to help them make the best decisions. Not something we usually hear about unless you're in the dog training world a whole lot, but we want our dogs to make good decisions. And we can have this come up with any dog that we've had. I've had it with dogs that I've adopted from shelters. I had one dog that came from a situation where he was tied up literally for a couple of years. And he basically got fed barely by his owners, in quotes, and he would break free. And he'd go to the neighbors and charm them into giving him food, which he was pretty successful at. But that said, we got him, he was about 30 pounds underweight. And then I had a little dog, wow. 30 pounds underweight, and quite a charmer. I got to tell you, he learned his skill of how to beg. But if you tried to put him outside or even go outside with him, he was terrified that you were going to leave him there. In the beginning, we could only get him outside when he went with our other dogs. He did really well being member of a family of dogs, because we could go out together, we could come in, and then later he would go out with them. And truly later in life, he would love to, I live on 11 and a half acres, and he'd love to go for a walk, which is amazing. I mean, it was really funny. He was this old man. He was a mix of American Bulldog, Pit, Boxer, and Irish Setter. He actually had tufts like an Irish Setter. And his name was Nixon because he had gels like Mr. Nixon, President Nixon did. So we kept the name he came with, Nixon. And in his old age, he would just walk and we'd go like, Nixon, Nixon. He couldn't even hear us, but he was confident enough to do that, wow. Which was, yeah, it was really amazing. I mean, he came in with no inside house. And I got to tell you, he was underweight, but he was still like 40 pounds. And he thought that jumping on the counters, on the coffee table, peeing, wherever. My daughter, he had actually chosen my daughter, and she was living with a friend with him and waiting for our new home to be finished before they both came back to the house. And the day, like shortly after she adopted him, when she didn't understand enough about shelter dogs or rescue dogs, because we'd had a lot of bred, you know, dogs that we bred. And she came, I was never forget, I picked her up at her, that place where she was staying, and she was in tears because he had just eaten yet another leash, a very pretty leash that she'd spent a lot of money on, a foolish thing for a new dog. But she was in tears and was like, I'm going to send it back. And I was like, no, you know, you're not going to do that. But she was just wailing in desperation. And yet he became quite a well-behaved, amazing family member. So he was a dog that was from rescue with a really bad, bad beginning. And then I had a 2.5 pound dog that was born at an ounce, and the breeder put her in her bra because that's, you know, kangaroo care, like the pouch. So she carried her because she was born. They didn't know if she was really going to make it. She was tiny. She was an ounce. And even though she was a little dog, that was, she was a lot littler than she was supposed to be. And when the breeder, who was a great breeder and had saved her and loved her, handed her to me, she literally took her out of her blouse and handed her to me.
Wow.
Yeah. And I got to tell you, it's the only dog I ever had that was not like, okay, mom, let's go. She cried for the whole trip to my friends where I was staying. I'd gone to Tennessee to get her. And forever after, now she's way better about it. And, you know, she's got a lot more trust and confidence, but she's still leery. And for many, many years, it was like, she didn't want to go to a stranger because who know, you know, you didn't know what would happen. It could be like a repeat. So it took a while for her to really get past that. And one of the things, as we talk about ways to deal with it, that I wouldn't do, everybody was like, just give her to me, just give her to me. Cause she was this little cute thing. And it was like, nope, we're not going to push her and create trauma. We're going to do this in a way that she can develop confidence. But those are two really interesting examples, because one was a shelter dog that was just on his own. And the other one was coddled and helped to survive being born in an ounce. And they both came with separation anxiety from different settings.
Would this lead to what you referred to as an emotional loop?
So, the loop refers to, the anxiety loop is what happens between the dog, you know, some people like to call them parents, some people hate that, some say dog guardians, but the dog, the person who takes care of the dog, right? I like to say, you know, the pet parent, the person, because, you know, I've had dogs in my house, I've had multiple dogs at one time, and sometimes they pick their person, it'll be one of my kids, or it'll be my husband or I, and some of the dogs are just everybody's dog, right? But especially when you've got that particular bond, there's an anxiety loop. If the person has anxiety, it can really be transferred to the dog. If the dog has anxiety, it can go back to the owner. Now, sometimes it's great, and you've got an anxious owner, they pet the dog, everybody moves into this different energetic state, they're calm, and it's wonderful. But often what happens is it's a loop that's self-feeding. If you, as the pet guardian, pet parent, pet's person, if you're not calm, if your nervous system isn't regulated, it will set off or exacerbate the anxiety in the dog. And so if the dog has anxiety, so let's say you've got a dog with separation anxiety, and maybe you were a kid that was what we used to call latchkey kid, you know, your parents weren't home much, or maybe they weren't home when you really needed them, maybe there was even trauma around it, that's going to color, unless you work on those issues, how you relate to your dog. You're going to give more anxiety. You're going to give them messages that you don't mean to. You're going to make decisions that can increase the anxiety because of your own anxiety. if you were, you know, someone who felt abandoned in relationships, if you didn't have solid parenting, you could take those feelings and they could color how you treat the separation anxiety in the dog. And it could go either way. You could be like, tough it out. You know, your parents were like, okay, it's fine. Tough. You're on your own. It doesn't matter. I go to work. You can handle it. Or they could have been very different in the response. So it's really important to understand. It's really important to understand that it's really like your own history. We know our history. We can work with our history. We can use our dogs to help us to grow through and heal our traumas and regulate our nervous system. Dogs can't tell us our story in words. They can't say, I was tied up at a stake and I didn't get fed properly, but they can tell us the story from their behaviors. They can be scared. It's more often of men, right? We'll often get a dog, especially from rescue, that is more scared of men, or a dog that's scared of loud noises.
You know what's interesting about that? For part of my life, I was a heating and air technician, and before that, I was a pest control technician, and dogs are scared of uniforms. Mm-hmm. I could go to the same house and be in a uniform, and the dog would be scared of me. And I could go to that same house later and be in street clothes, and the dog wouldn't even care.
Yeah. So it's interesting. And we don't know. They're not telling us in words this story, but they're telling us in their behaviors. And it's really important not to take that attitude of just like pushing through, making them get over it, because we don't make them get over it. What we do is we push down the anxiety, and we do really lead to greater trauma. Dog bites, right? Because they're scared, or they can get ill. You know, we look at human illness and we tie it very clearly to trauma events. For example, cancer. We will say there's often, usually the numbers are between 2 years and 5 years of someone getting cancer, they can pinpoint a major trauma. Well, truth is that dogs get cancer. And the research shows as well that when they're under chronic stress, which happens with anxiety, or when they have had a trauma, they too are more likely to have an immune disorder, get cancer, have some ill health, whether it's on a mental or physical level. And then we see a dog that's behaving badly, not because they're a bad dog, but because they're either physically ill or they don't have the emotional stability or resources to handle things in a way that we would want them to and that they would want to.
When you take a look at this anxiety loop, is there a way to go from anxiety loop to a solution? If there is, what do you call it?
Yeah, well, I want to go from an anxiety loop to a healing loop, because I think that the bond really is a gateway for healing for us and for our dogs. It really is the way that we live our purpose, which is to live fully, joyfully, and do what we're here on this planet to do. And the truth is, dogs have purpose too. So to help them live fully, joyfully, and on purpose. So I have a process that I work with. There are some amazing dog behaviorists that have processes that they work with for how to turn around separation anxiety. But I have a process that works specifically with emotional states, whether it's depression, whether it's anxiety. And it's always going to be adapted because you're a different individual and a different dog, right? So it's not like a do this, do this, do this kind of formula, but it's very much where we take into account who the human is, who the dog is, and then the bond that they have between them. And we really work with that. So I have
It's who the human is, and it's who the dog is, and then how the bond is, correct?
And how the bond is. And we've got to really take in all of those parts. And no matter how much we wish it might be different, we really have to see the dog, and we have to see ourselves as we truly are. What are our needs from the relationship? What are the dogs? And that's one of the things that's really neat that has shifted over the years, is that it used to be we got a dog and we looked at what we needed. And now people much more are looking at, what does that dog need to? What's that bond? They're seeing the dog. And that's really, really key. So there is a process that I have in working with anxiety in humans too, but humans, dogs, and the bond. And I'd love to share a couple of those steps, because I want to give our listeners something to take away just right now they can use immediately that will help them to feel more conscious, more comfortable themselves, and more comfortable for their dogs.
Well, let's start with step number one.
Okay, so step number one is really to get centered, get grounded, and be present. That's number one. So before we do anything else, we want to calm our nervous system. And he's like, okay, how do I do that, right? So there are some really simple ways. One is to get grounded. You can really be in your body. It's something you can Google, like, how do you get grounded, right? There's there are a lot of breathing exercises. Breathing is a very key thing to do and a really simple way. Again, you can go to, you know, Google or whatever search engine you're using and look up breathing exercises, but they're really simple ones.
So could we do this? Let's say that I've had a very stressful day, mm-hmm. and I'm going home to my dog.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I hear you say get grounded.
Mm-hmm.
Would it be the simple breath, like just breathe in, breathe out? Or would it be breathe in plus visualization? I mean, how easy can you make this?
Okay, so you can make it as easy as works for you. So for some people, just taking a breath in and a breath out, like three breaths, will really shift their nervous system. For other people, you'll hear a common one, like hold a breath. Let me just tell you this one. It'll be like four breaths, like hold in to the count of four, hold to the count of four, let out for the count of four.
Okay. So we've got everything from, I'm just going to close my eyes, I'm going to take a deep breath in, and I'm going to take a deep breath out, all the way to doing a count. So that's just to become centered or grounded.
Right. And I'm going to teach something that before we're done called the Castle Anchor that will literally shift your state on the spot in a number of seconds. But these are things already you're familiar with, breathing. We all know, you know, take a deep breath, that there are different breathing exercises. There are guided meditations. But you said something about coming into the house, right? I'm coming home to my dog. Well, this breath is really even more important than you said, because before you walk in the door, most of us walk in the door and our dogs are excited and we're excited and everybody's like, hello, hello. You know, it's like a great greeting. But if you've got a dog with separation anxiety or a dog that gets overly excited, one of the really good things would be to take those breaths, get grounded, and not make a big deal of when you're coming or going. And that is so counterintuitive to most of us, right? I mean, I walk in the door and I get, you know, serenaded. I get every, you know, the dogs are tails are wagging and who's going to say hello first. But what we want to do, especially with dogs that get very aroused or that have a separation anxiety, is we want to help them be calm when we're there, when we're leaving, when we're coming back. So we don't want to engage, and that taking a breath before you come in is a really good idea so that we get centered and calm down.
It's something that I could do in my car or before I even walk in the door.
And actually, it's something that I recommend to people that I work with that they do anyway. Even if you don't have like anxiety per se, we all have a little bit here and there, but even if you don't have anxiety as something that you really struggle with, or a dog with anxiety, the more that we can be centered, grounded, and regulating our nervous system, that's going to be huge. It's going to help everybody around us, our relationships, people we work with, family, friends, and ourselves. So I tell people to do this periodically throughout the day. Really ground, get in your body, especially a lot of us that work up in our heads, go into our body, be very grounded, and regulate that nervous system so it's in a calm state, not a state of arousal or over arousal. So what you said is really important, not just for when we're walking in to greet our dogs, but to stay in a regulated state, which is better for our health and our decision-making and everything else. So that's really a good point that you brought up.
What would you say step number two is?
So step number two is to reframe. You know, we get a dog. Sometimes we get a dog with the idea that we're going to take a dog who's had a hard time and help them. But often we get a dog because we have these ideas about us and our dog. Maybe we've had a dog that we've had a great relationship with. Maybe we watched a lot of TV and we've seen, you know, dogs and their people. But we have an idea about this wonderful relationship, right? We've got these fantasies in our head. And then we get a dog, especially if we get a dog with separation anxiety or anxiety. And all of a sudden, we start thinking, ugh, you know, what happened? What did we get? This shouldn't be. And we start going into like, you know, all of the, we spin all of these stories about the dog, et cetera, right? And so what we want to do is we want to reframe so that this is not, oh my God, isn't this horrible? I got a dog that isn't so great. I've got this burden. And really reframe it so that we see this as a gateway relationship, a relationship that helps us to live our most joyful, fullest, happiest, healthiest, on purpose life, and helps our dog do that too. And so when you get a dog with anxiety or separation anxiety, you could get really feeling like it's damaged, and a lot of people will be very negative, or you can really look at it as a stepping stone for your growth, for helping your dog be all the dog can be, and for having an amazing relationship. Because if you have a dog that has issues and you work with that dog, you really work on those issues, you're going to have, you've really set the foundation for a very special relationship down the road. So the dog isn't damaged. It's really important to start seeing them in your head as whole, as to start focusing on their positives. What do you like about this dog? Like, what's great about the dog? And then also look at what is the dog triggering in me for me to grow? Because our dogs come to us and they really provide us with opportunities to grow. So what is it that's getting triggered? What is it? It can be, is my dog wanting too much? Are they demanding too much? Do I have no space? Or could it be, my dog isn't affectionate enough. Maybe they don't love me. Maybe I'm not good enough. Like, you want to really see what you're being triggered. And you want to keep this as open. You want to be very curious. What does the dog need? What do I need? And really start to look with richness at what this situation could possibly offer. So on the one hand, you're not in the fantasy. You're really looking, this is what the dog is now. And it may be very far from what you had imagined. But you also want to work towards that and the relationship you can have with who the dog is. And not every dog is capable of the same things. But if you come from this perspective of openness instead of disappointment, and if you're feeling disappointment, it's not to say you shouldn't know it. You should know it. But then choose to reframe it and look at it. And you may find that you've got a whole bunch of gifts from this dog that you would have never put on your list of what I wanted to get out of a relationship. And yet that's what you get. Very powerful.
What I find interesting is how many times in the last few minutes you talked about growth and relationships. Mm-hmm. And that it really truly is a relationship with the dog. There really is an interaction between you, almost as if they were a human. You know, you go through your calming exercise, you reframe, you look for the good things in the relationship with the dog, and then you figure out what's triggering you. And I enjoyed this part of the conversation for the fact that it's not something that I would have ever considered. So you have a third step in this process. What would the third step be?
Okay. And I'd just like to respond to something you said, because I think it's really wonderful. I love that you're thinking about it in these terms now. And I think it's important that we realize that our dogs are amazing beings. They aren't humans. Sometimes I think that, you know, they're more than humans, or they can be nicer than humans, or all kinds of things. But I think it's important to realize that there's incredible relationship. They bring so much to the table that people never used to even consider that they brought. You know, their level of consciousness, their level of learning, what they're capable of. But it's also important to remember that they aren't human, and that they aren't the figment of our imagination, but that they're real live, real live beings, real live dogs with their own personality. So let me go to three. So number one, we can recap them later, but number three is to really be focusing on what your outcome is, right? We do that, you know, in a lot of situations. We do it in human therapy. We do it in all of in our relationships. What do we want in our businesses, in our health goals? So here, what is our end goal, right? What are we working towards? I think it's really important to define that and to be open that we might learn a lot. We might shift that goal as we get to know the dogs and our bond and our even ourselves better, but really be focused on our goal and on trust and partnership. This really is a partnership. And so we want to develop that. We want them to trust us and we want to trust them both ways. And so I ask people to ask what I call the litmus test question. This is a question I use in different ways with patients in my practice and with people that I work with in my mentoring of, you know, high achiever entrepreneurs, which is, you know, what I do, the other part of what I do. And so the litmus test question means that basically this is the question. It's like, depending on your answer to this depends on what you do, period. So the question becomes, is this thought? Is this feeling? Is this action that I'm going to take? Is this belief that I'm holding on to? Does that bring me closer or further to my goal? In this case, helping ourselves and our dogs through the anxiety and developing trust and partnership. Does it do that? We're not looking for a quick fix. We're not looking for something that gets that dog to obey and, like, you know, get into the crate, be quiet, not bark in the next 15 minutes. We're looking at something that's setting us and our dog up for a long-term trusted partnership, the kind of thing where we think about our dog and we just, you know, that smile comes to our face. And that's one of the reasons also that I look at the power of this. When I do a lot of public lectures and I'll bring somebody up to the front of the room and I'll say, what turns your lights on? Let's work with that. And almost always, like huge, huge majority of the time, it's their pet. Even if they haven't had a pet, it's their neighbor's pet. And they just get a big, you know, their eyes get all lit up when I say, tell me about them. So the goal here, ask that question every day. We ask it when you're picking a veterinarian. Is this going to be the right vet for what I want? When you're picking a dog trainer or a behaviorist, if you got real severe separation anxiety and can't work it out any other way. And sometimes it doesn't, you don't even want it to get bad. You want to go get that help. But always ask that question. When I tell the dog this, when I set up my training in this way, when I offer a treat, when I don't offer a treat, do I make it just about bribery? All of these questions go through that lens of trust, partnership, and my outcome. So it's not just a short-term getting the dog to do what I want, which doesn't work so well, especially when they hit adolescence, which I got to tell you, they've got a teenage brain very much. Like we have teenage brains in humans, teenage brains in dogs or something else. That's when, you know, little puppies follow you and they become adolescents and they say, maybe not. Let me think about that. I don't know if I want to do that. Give me a good reason. So you want that trust and partnership. And also we know that dogs are often adopted older. And despite the great stories we hear about, they saved my life and it was wonderful, we don't always hear the stories about what came before, what came in the early part. So it's ask that question, the litmus test question. Is that, you know, is this behavior, is this way of handling that, is that going to bring me what I want long term?
That's a fantastic three-step process. Get grounded, reframe, and then look for the outcome and the end goal to get to the litmus test question. Mm-hmm. What have we not talked about before we wrap up that we should?
Okay, well, there are a couple of things. First of all, realize that these are three steps in a process, right? These are three steps that will move you and your dog to a much better state, but they're three steps. There are other steps. And I guess if I want to say one thing that it really stands out to me is pay attention. Pay attention to your reactions. Pay attention to your dog's reactions. Don't come from judgment, right? Don't come from, oh, they shouldn't have or I shouldn't have, but really be discerning about what gets the effect you want and what doesn't. What triggers my trauma? What seems to trigger theirs? So become a real detective, not from a place of judgment, but a place of discernment, because the more open you are in that way, the more you're letting yourself and your dog change. The more you kind of box things off and say, oh, this is what it is. You know, this is what that behavior means, or it's never going to get better, or it's been 6 months. You lock that dog and you lock yourself in. And that's not where you want to go. You want something open that can evolve, that can grow and bring really our dogs, you know, we get them because we want to be happy. We want them to be happy. So we want to look at the many, many things, and there are other aspects, but this is a huge one. Don't be judging the dog, but be very discerning. If the dog is misbehaving, like, you know, you come home and the house is a wreck, well, probably what happened is that the dog wasn't ready for the amount of freedom that you gave them. They were anxious. What does an anxious dog do? It pees, it poops, it rips things up. I had a little dog once that wasn't so much on separation anxiety, but a little bit. And she had a habit that my father was not thrilled with. When we left her alone in the kitchen, and he used to have these beautiful gates and this big, you know, in the kitchen, she was a little dog. She used to stand on her 2 feet and eat the wallpaper right around the border of the room. Now, luckily my father loved this dog a lot, but was she being naughty? She was being anxious. She was being anxious. We didn't see it in any other way. She didn't act crazy when we left. She didn't cry. She didn't whine. She was a happy dog. But if she was left alone too long, she was pretty good for a while. If you left her too long for her, that wallpaper was history. So one thing we didn't do, and I'm thinking it would be good if we could do that. I know we were looking at a time clock too, is to really do I'd like to share the Castle Anchor so that people could start using that right away.
Okay. So let me ask you a couple of questions about this Castle Anchor. One, where did it come from?
Where did it come from? You know, nobody's asked me that question, Scott. I know you ask questions that nobody has. No, it's like, I've got to think back. I've been using this for so many, like, decades. Where did it come from? I think it came from originally me putting different pieces together from my work as a therapist, my work studying different body therapies. My husband, who is an acupuncturist, so we would talk Chinese medicine. And part of this has to do with what in Chinese medicine they call conception vessel, like going through the center of the body. A lot of my studies of energetic medicine, where I learned how to shift the energy really, really fast with thinking about certain things, with looking at certain things. So it comes from a lot of different places that I put together, and it evolved. And I want to teach a really simple, simple piece of it that in my programs with people, and when I work individually with either patients, you know, in their regular, you know, humans in my sessions, or when I'm working with people around the dogs, this is something that we have embellished versions of it, shall we say, but I'd like to give a really simple one. And it is okay. one of my favorite things, because it's something that I've taught therapists, and they've come to me, people I didn't even know actually heard me teach this. And I've met people, I kid you not, at airports, who said to me, Dr. Castle. And I'm like, yeah, like, do I know you? And they're like, you don't know me, but you taught my friend this thing, or my therapist this thing. And I've been using it for years. And they tell me stories about how it's changed their life. So I want to share it right now. Really, really simple. And actually, if you want to get I'm thinking, which is why, how am I going to get this? I'm going to be putting something up on my website soon that you can get, that will go over this and repeat it for you, and give you some of the embellishments you can use. So simple version. I want to not only tell you how to do it, I want to show you how effective it is. Okay. You game to play along with us, Scott?
Yeah, I'm 100%. Let's do it.
Okay. So we're not going to do this in relation to our dogs now, right? Because that's kind of loaded, and we're here, and that's something that's some people are really struggling with. But I'd like you to think of something that, on a scale of 1 to 10, maybe it upsets you, like, I don't know, 6, 7, 8, something that's not the most earth-shattering thing in the world, but something that bugs you.
Traffic.
Okay. That, I know you. I would put that like at about, a scale of 1 to 10, 20.
standing in line. How about standing in line?
Standing in line is better. I've seen you do that, right? Or I've seen it through the phone. Yeah. And the reason is not because you can't use it in traffic. You got to be willing to use it in traffic, right? Which is the first one. And I always say, start with something a little bit easier. So I want everybody, as you're listening to this, to pick something, not like for Scott, the being in traffic, but something that, you know, maybe bothers you 7, maybe 8, something that's not super intense. And I want you to feel the way that feels in your body. Feel the way you like that frustration or your anger or your sadness, whatever it is that comes up for you, right? With that thing that you're thinking about. And now let's do the anger. So now just, you know, you're not focusing on that anymore, but what I want you to do is I want you to take your hand, either hand, doesn't matter, put it in the center of your body, like near your heart, with your fingers facing up. And I want you to breathe, whether you do it like just a breath in, breath out. You don't have to do any fancy breathing, but breathe. And I want you to look at your hand. And I want, so you're looking at your hand and you're breathing, right? And you do what I call soft focus. You're not staring at your hand, but you're not cheating. You're not looking up. You're not looking away. You're not looking down. You're just looking at your hand. And you might take your other hand. You might put it on your thigh. Or if you're in a chair, you might touch the chair or the couch next to you. If you're sitting, you might feel your feet on the floor. You might even feel your butt on the chair if you're sitting. So I want you to just feel your body in the chair if you're in a chair. Or just feel where you're being supported. If you're standing, feel the ground under you. And just breathe. But while you're doing this, just look at your hand. Okay, you can't cheat looking at your hand. What's cheating? Cheating is holding your breath or putting your eyes someplace else. So just look at your hand, breathe. And you might even hear the sounds around you. There might be sounds in the room, or you can even hear silence, right? It's a funny thing to say, but you can hear silence or just and feel the silence. And just keep looking at your hand and breathing. And after you do this for a while, you can literally do this like in a, pretty much a second. But for now, just be in your body, drop down, put your attention not in your thoughts in your head, just pay attention to your breathing. Okay, what I want you to do now is while you're doing that, I want you to think back on that thing that bugged you before. So now you're still looking at your hand, you're breathing, soft focus, you're still in your body, you're feeling yourself being supported, and you're now aware of that thing that bothered you before. And most of the time, you can feel that shifted. It's not an eight. Can you feel a shift in it, Scott? And I know that traffic is the biggest. You're not so fond of lines either, but could you feel a shift?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say that that put me to like a one or a two.
Okay.
Right? It moved me down the scale, if that's the direction that we're going.
That's the direction. And the cool thing about this is that in the beginning, you know, I'm talking you through it, but when I do it, it takes a few seconds or a second, depending on how significant the issue is. Like if I'm, you know, if I were sitting in traffic and I had an appointment and I might be getting stressed, it might take me a couple seconds. Generally, I can do it in less than 5 seconds. Fun thing about it, you can do it before a meeting. You can do it when you've got something that makes you anxious. You can do it without ever saying anything out loud. You can even do it. Sometimes I stand in front of a really big crowd when I'm giving a lecture and maybe there's 500 or 1,000 people. Nobody knows that I put my hand in the center of my chest and that I'm doing an anchor. Or I even just think that my hand is in the center of the chest and I'm doing an anchor. And my anxiety, my stress, my anger, my whatever it is, it goes down. My nervous system regulates, my breathing shifts. Now, I'm going to add just a little bonus and then, you know, I'm going to find, we'll figure out some way of getting some more info to you for those of you who really want to play with this more. You can start to do this sitting next to your dog or thinking about your dog, but don't be staring at your dog, okay? If you do it with your dog, just kind of feel your dog's presence. You can look at the dog out of the side of, you know, a little bit out of the side of your eye here or there. You can take it away from your hand and kind of just a soft focus. You can take that, take your dog in while you're looking at your hand. Don't stare at your dog, but just be aware. And you can do it even if your dog isn't there. You can feel your dog's presence in that calm, regulated state with you. So that's something that once you practice it, you can do it when you walk in and your dog is like, you've walked in and the dog has maybe destroyed a crate that you might have left them in. Or the dog is just whining and it just is tugging at your heartstrings. or you've got like, I can't leave my dog that long. I have to go get a babysitter because you're doing some really good program that is acclimating your dog in an appropriate way to being alone. And you're like, I got to pay for the babysitter, for the dog, whatever it is, you can do that and shift that. And then you can be both feeling better in yourself and you could be presenting. You know what they say about, I'd love to be the person my dog thinks I am. Well, you know, sometimes the dogs see us not in our best way, but we don't want that loop. We want the healing loop, no anxiety loop, healing loop. So this is something that you can do in a moment in any situation. It will shift your state to one that really supports healing, health, well-being, and a great relationship with you and your dog.
That was really cool and amazing. To go from start to finish and talk through this entire process with you, Dr. K, when it comes to taking a human therapist view of what it takes to help a dog go from separation anxiety to not have it, to have the human interaction, to getting out of an emotional loop, your three-step process, and then your Caslow anchor. If there was anything else you'd wanted to add today for this, what would you want to share?
I guess what I'd want to share is that, one, it's not a straight process. Okay, you're going to do this, it's going to bring up stuff in you, it's going to bring up stuff in your dog. And you're not going to know every like right way in quotes to do it. It really is a learning process. So one is to really look at this as a journey, as a process. And I said not to judge your dog before. What I didn't say was don't judge yourself. Okay. Be discerning. So I'm not saying let yourself like, you know, okay, go home and scream at your dog and say, oh, well, Dr. K said, don't judge myself. No, I'm saying do your best and appreciate that. Give yourself that grace, but be in that state of learning what worked, what didn't. What do I wish I had done different? Well, I can't go back, but what will I do different next time? But be kind to not only your dog, be kind to yourself. And so it's really to let go of judgment of yourself, keep learning, get the best help you can get, and follow your gut, not blindly, okay? Because our gut can lead us down roads based on our own history that aren't always the best, but pay attention. If you see a vet who's telling you, oh, just put the dog in the crate, you know, go to work, don't worry about it, that's not the vet for you. Talk to your vet. See how they respond to a dog with these issues. See if that's in alignment with what you believe. Same thing with a trainer. See what their philosophy is. See if that feels in your gut right to you. And really put together a team for you, human support, for your anxiety if you need it, for your dogs. Get a team that supports you and helps you to really look back on this. And instead of saying, oh my God, that was a nightmare, I'm so glad that was over, to be able to say, you know, that had some really tough spots, but I am so happy with where we are now. And sometimes it's the like everything you wish for, sometimes it's not. But when you can say, wow, we've really come far and I've learned so much, and I really cherish this relationship and the learning process. That's what I really want for people that I work with or people that get to hear what I say or everybody who has a dog and is loved by a dog. So we could go on and on, but I know we got to stop. That's why I offer some other things to help us go deeper. Yeah.
So Dr. Caslow, you have gone over quite a bit of information here today that would help any dog owner. Where can people find out more about you and the Caslow Anchor?
Best way to do that is to email me. My email is drk@drcaslow.com. You can get it on my website also. And let me know that you'd like more information about programs that I offer, about one-to-one work, or about the Caslow Anchor. As I said, there's more detail and ways to use it. If that's something that you want to know about, just email me. I will get back to you. And if I don't figure I didn't get the email, and email again, please. I definitely want to hear from you.
And Dr. Caslow, if somebody wanted to work with you on a level with their dogs, dealing with some anxiety, Is it the same email address? Is there a group that you have for them? What's coming up next for them?
So there is a group coming up probably in the spring. I don't have an exact date yet. So if you send me an email and mark it waitlist, I'll put you on the waitlist and I will let you know as soon as that group is forming so that you make sure you get a spot. If you want one-on-one, if there's something you can't wait and you want to get started now, then you could put in the subject line one-on-one. And I do a limited number of one-on-one work with people. But if you're interested in the programs that are going to be for pet owners and some for pet professionals as well, wait list and either market that you're pet owner or pet professional.
Well, thank you for taking the time, Dr. K. This was fantastic today.
Thank you so much. It's been really great to share this information with you and our listeners.